It's October 2020. Welcome to Muse News, the BCMA's monthly museum sector news podcast. Each month, we recap some of the latest news, happenings, and announcements from museums, galleries, and heritage organizations across BC and beyond. I'm Lorenda.
And I'm Ryan. Thanks, Lorenda.
Join us as we explore the latest Muse news.
Thanks, Lorenda. The Alberni Valley Museum reopens with a new exhibit on Chief Dan George. The newest show at the museum is called Chief Dan George, Actor and Activist, and follows the life and impact of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation Chief Dan George. George was an actor, musician, poet, and author, as well as a spokesperson for the First Nations rights movement in BC and Canada in the 1960s and 70s. Although the exhibit is centered on George, it also delves in the history of Indigenous peoples in Canada, using paintings, photographs, and memorabilia donated by George's friends and family. Quote, "It talks about his life, as well as some of the history regarding First Nations rights and equality," explained education curator Shelley Harding. Chief Dan George is a traveling exhibit on loan from the North Vancouver Museum and will be available to view at the Alberni Valley Museum until March 2021.
Thanks, Ryan. 12 artist-run centers in BC will receive the 2020 Audain Prize for the Visual Arts. This year's award breaks from the tradition of giving the prize to an individual artist since the Audain Foundation started the recognition in 2004. It's in response to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, which has impacted many sectors, including the arts. Given the challenges being faced by artists throughout the province in this pandemic year, we thought that rather than just focusing the attention on a single artist, we would like to support as many artists as possible, Foundation Chair Michael Audain said in a media release. The foundation will give a $10,000 check to each of the following 10 Vancouver-based centers: 221A, Access Gallery, Artspeak Gallery, Grunt Gallery, Malaspina Printmakers, Orr Gallery, Other Sites for Artist Projects, UNIT PITT Society for Art and Critical Awareness, Vivo Media Arts Center, and Western Front. The same amount will be received by the Alternator Center for Contemporary Art, which is based in Kelowna, and the Open Space Art Society, a Victoria organization. Congratulations to all the recipients.
On his HBO program Last Week Tonight, satirical news host John Oliver turned his philanthropic attention to museums. Oliver pointed to this year's findings by the American Alliance for Museums that 1 in 3 museums might close because of the COVID-19 pandemic. In an effort to support struggling institutions, Oliver is offering to send his, quote, "small but high-quality collection of modern masterpieces." These include a post-coital portrait of 2 anthropomorphic rats, which he describes as his very own Mona Lisa, and a very elegant painting of TV host Wendy Williams eating a lamb chop on a national tour to 5 U.S. museums for 2 weeks each. Along with the honor of displaying these works of art, Oliver will be donating $10,000 to each museum, with a matching cash gift to a food bank in the area. Museums are invited to submit their applications to host the collections by emailing john@johnoliverhasyourraterotica.com by November 1st.
In the 24 years since the Art Gallery of Alberta launched its biennial gala to celebrate the province artists, the curated exhibition of contemporary works has not included a single Black artist. Curators at the Downtown Edmonton Gallery discovered this fact after helping participating artists prepare for this year's exhibition. The curators' conversations with artists about representation took place as support for the Black Lives Matter movement surged in North America. So when the Borderline 2020 Biennial of Contemporary Art exhibition opened in late September, the gallery issued a statement that both owned up to the lack of representation and promised to take steps to dismantle systemic racism within its organization and Alberta's visual arts community. Arts organizations like ourselves, like many across the country, are trying to be very transparent, accountable, and responsible for not just the histories of our organizations, but also our futures, Catherine Croston, the AGA's executive director and chief curator, said Tuesday in an interview with CBC's Edmonton's Radioactive. The gallery has promised to ensure Black artists are represented in the future and has postponed its 2022 biennial to allow more time to consult with the community members and BIPOC artists. "We want to be open about it, to recognize the fact that this has been an issue and that we are accountable and will be seeking to make changes in the future," Croston said. 11 biennial exhibits have occurred since 1996, each typically featuring several dozen artists. Every exhibition has included Indigenous artists and artists of color, but no Black artists have ever been included. Croston said the AGA plans to expand the reach of its public call for submissions and aim for a more diverse curatorial team. Over to you, Ryan.
Thanks, Lorinda. A new British study reveals the impact that the COVID-19 pandemic is having on the global culture sector. Museums, galleries, and libraries have been the worst hit part of the culture sector during the COVID-19 pandemic, according to new research for the Arts Council of England. A report for the Centre of Economics and Business Research says that the gross value added, or GVA, of these sectors this year is 26.3% lower than it would have been without the pandemic. In comparison, the GVA across the whole arts and cultural sector is 23.1% lower. The report found overwhelming evidence that the arts, entertainment, and recreation sectors have been among the sectors most severely affected by the coronavirus lockdown. It says this part of the economy is more severely impacted than others, partly due to the lack of ability to transform physical spaces, landmarks, and attractions into commodities that can enter the online marketplace.
Thanks, Ryan. Vancouver's oldest koi, which survived a pair of otter onslaughts at the Sun Yat-sen Chinese Garden, has been moved and is adapting swimmingly to his newly renovated home. Dragon Gate is 34 years old and came to Vancouver for Expo 86, according to Emily Schultz, spokesperson for the Bladel Conservatory, which welcomed the koi this week. He actually survived the two river otter attacks in 2018 and 2019, so quite amazing, and we're really excited to have him here, she says. He's believed to be the oldest koi in Vancouver. The 60-centimeter-long koi is apparently known for his tenacity due to surviving those attacks, with several scars on his back to show for it. 11 koi were killed when a stealthy otter snuck into the garden to feast upon fish in 2018, including a 50-year-old koi named Madonna. Dragon Gate was moved out of the garden's pond, along with a dozen of other fish, before being returned once it seemed safe. But it wouldn't be Dragon Gate's last brush with a clever carnivore. In 2019, 6 more koi were killed by a river otter. No otter was ever captured, and no one knows if the two invasions were the work of the same creature. Schultz says Dragon Gate should be able to enjoy the rest of his life without having to worry about an otter invasion. We are very happy to provide a very safe home for Dragon Gate at the conservatory, she says. And since koi have a lifespan of up to 100 years, Dragon Gate could have quite a few years ahead of him to enjoy his pond with 9 other koi. The conservatory is home to 150 free-flying birds and 500 exotic plants and flowers. He'll be joining all of our feathered friends like the cockatoos and a few finches and canaries, Schultz says. And we wish Dragon Gate a lot of joy and a happy new home.
An Okanagan man finds fame in retirement with a model railway 50 years in the making. An Osoyoos, BC man named Paul Pedersen has grown a childhood passion into a retirement project that has earned him global recognition. Last week, his Osoyoos Desert Model Railway Museum won the annual TripAdvisor's Traveler Choice Award for specialty museums. The U.S. online travel company says only 10% of destinations on its portal can receive the honor. Quote, "That was absolutely a big surprise, and I didn't even know we could get that," said the 79-year-old. Pedersen established his little wonderland in the desert 5 years after his retirement. Since opening the museum to the public in 2003, the collection has grown to 4 times its original size, with 45 computer-operated mini-trains running on a track 2 kilometers long.
After having closed its doors since March due to the pandemic, the Richmond Museum has reopened its exhibits to the public. The museum, which shares the same building as the Richmond Art Gallery and the Brig House Public Library, was one of the many facilities that were closed due to COVID-19 back in mid-March. Sheila Hill, curator of exhibitions at the Richmond Museum, says they are excited to welcome visitors back with safety protocols in place. "Our City at Work exhibit is more relevant than ever as we all work our way through this challenging pandemic year," said Hill. "We hope visitors will enjoy discovering the many ways our city keeps us healthy and safe with all of our services in place." The museum's exhibit is available to the public, however, no programs and events are being held at this time. The Richmond Museum is open Wednesday to Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Congratulations to the Richmond Museum for your reopening.
Thanks, Lorinda. The BC Museums Association celebrates the creativity and resilience of the arts, culture, and heritage sectors. The BCMA handed out its awards for outstanding achievement during its 49th annual award showcase. This year's virtual conference attracted a record number of museum professionals and industry representatives from across the province who came together to celebrate innovative exhibitions, community collaborations, and exemplary service to the sector. The BCMA's annual awards recognizes institutions and individuals who exemplify excellence in the province's museums, galleries, and historical community. The Museum of Surrey received an annual Award of Merit for Excellence in Community Engagement. Two Rivers Gallery received an Award of Merit for Excellence in Exhibitions. Touchstone Nelson Museum of Art and History received an honorable mention for Impact and Engagement. Barbara Bell, head archivist at the Greater Vernon Museum and Archives, received a Distinguished Service Award. Julie Fowler, executive and artistic director of Island Mountain Arts, received a Distinguished Service Award. Quote, "This has been an unbelievably challenging year for BC's museums, galleries, and cultural centers, but our members have faced COVID-19 with creativity, resilience, and an unwavering belief in the transformative power of museums," says Ryan Hunt, BCMA Executive Director. Congratulations to all 2020 recipients.
It's a journey through our collective past and a searing critique of colonialism. Opening Thursday at the Museum of Anthropology at UBC is Shame and Prejudice, A Story of Resilience, artist Kent Monkman's solo exhibit on Canada's colonial history. It's also timely given the current discussion about systemic racism. "We still have this colonial legacy here in Canada, and we need to correct it," says Dr. Jennifer Kramer, MOA's curatorial liaison for the exhibition. So Monkman brings us all into this dialogue to address our history, but to show that it is ongoing. Shame and Prejudice uses roughly 80 pieces from Monkman's own paintings, drawings, and sculptural works to historical artifacts and artworks borrowed from museums and private collections. So not only will you be seeing this monumental restoring of historical paintings, you also see three-dimensional installations, and it brings this history into the present and even into the future, Kramer adds. She says Shame and Prejudice also aims to right some historical wrongs. "This is a retelling of Canadian history, reinserting Indigenous presence into the land and forcing us to rethink how we think about Canada." For example, The Daddies is a remake of Robert Harris's 1884 painting, Meeting of the Delegates of British North America to Settle the Terms of Confederation. MOA is the final stop on the exhibition's three-year cross-country tour and runs until January 3rd.
To stay up to date on breaking Muse news, follow our Twitter at BC Museums ASSN. And if you would like your Muse news to be shared on this podcast, email the BCMA at museumsassn.bc.ca. Thank you and good night.